Hi, this is Casey Treat. I'm pastor at Christian Faith, and we are excited to have you with us on our podcast. Thanks for joining in. I'm praying that you're going to hear a word that will inspire you, empower you to connect with Jesus and become more like him. That's what we live for. That's what's happening on today's podcast.
Hey, we've been in a series on being guarded. And we've been talking about attempting to live healthy in a guarded way, but most of us are living unhealthy because we're guarded through fear, not wisdom. The Bible's clear. It says, guard your heart, for out of it flow the issues of life. And so the Bible tells you to be guarded. The problem is many of us are guarded not through biblical wisdom, but through past fears. See, many of us build walls because we were left, we were abandoned, we were hurt, we were scarred, we had a bad first marriage, we had a bad upbringing, a parent left us, hurt us, and so we started building walls because we don't want to be abandoned, we don't want to be hurt, we don't want to be used, we don't want to be walked on, and so you start building walls, but those walls that were built through fear end up being prisons that we live in. How can we tear down these walls that were built in fear? How can we break out of these prisons that we're living in so that we can live the life God called for us to live? How can we live healthy? How can we live with hope? How can we live fearless? In John 14, verse 18, it's a fascinating verse that Jesus tells his disciples. He goes, I will not leave you orphans. I will come to you. I will not leave you orphans. This is weird to me because Jesus is talking to a group of disciples that have been following him for almost 3 years, but none of them were orphans. They all had parents. Could you imagine Peter in this moment? And he's like, oh, Jesus, you were so close. You have been crushing it for 3 years. Like you've been batting 1,000 on everything you've been saying, but you missed one. It's not really true, Jesus. We kind of all have our parents. None of us are orphans. He's like, no. I'm not talking about practically speaking on earth. I'm saying you're living as an orphan because you are living without a healthy relationship with your Father in heaven. And so you're living attempting to fill voids that only your Father in heaven can fill. And so you are trying to find comfort in earthly things. You are trying to find success in money or in power or in fame or in you are looking to fill a void that you have, but it's not fillable with things this earth can provide. You have to have a relationship, my Father in heaven. And until you have that, you'll live as an orphan. How many of us are still living like that? We're still looking for our job to make us feel fulfilled. We're still looking for that next relationship. And we've been swiping right for 10 years now. Is that the way you swipe? Does anyone know? I'm just kidding. Don't tell me. Like I do. We've been looking to fill a void, and that's the spirit of an orphan. He goes, listen, all of you are living like orphans, but I won't leave you that way. I want to connect you with my Father in heaven. I want to bring about a relationship so that you no longer look for things in this earth, in this world, to fill what only a relationship with your Father in heaven can fulfill. You see, we have to realize, we have to understand that God created us, and he created us with a need for a relationship with him. It's a quiet group this morning. You guys okay? See, God made you, and he forms you, and he designs you, and he made you in his image. But part of what he did when he made you was he hardwired into you a need to connect with him. And so if you don't have that need being met by him, you'll attempt to meet it by someone or something else. Have you ever attempted to fill that void with someone else? And it always works for a minute. But the problem is it doesn't last. So you're like, oh, I'm good. And then that wears out. And so now you got to look for something else. So what used to fill that need, That money that you made no longer fills that need. Now you need to make more. What used to fill that need in relationships no longer fills that need. And now you're looking for, and that's why we in our marriages have struggles. We go, man, this person must not be who God called me to. No, you're just attempting for them to fill a need they'll never be able to fulfill, and nor will anyone else. I married the wrong person. No, you didn't. They could say the same thing. Oh, I need a better job. I need this. I need that. No, the problem is that you can't fill that void outside of the connection with your Father in heaven. The next job won't fill it. The raise won't fill it. A new politician won't fill it. A new car won't fill it. How many of y'all just were like, I just need some new clothes. Just need something. Just retail therapy up in here. How often does retail therapy work beyond the moment you swipe? A week later, you need something new. So that didn't work very long. Some of y'all need to delete Amazon off your phone, by the way. This is just free pastoral advice. This is just free. This is for the men. Dad, men are like, thank you. Why? Because you were looking to fill a void consistently. And God is like, no, you're just, it's the spirit of an orphan that you need to solve. Because you're just looking for your place. You're looking to be valued. You're looking to be secure. You're looking for safety. You're looking for comfort. And that is only found with my Father in heaven. The problem is many of us see God incorrectly, but how we see him is how we engage with him. Let me say that again. Many of us see God incorrectly. The problem is how we see him is how we'll engage with him. So if you see him as judgmental, you'll engage with him as if he's judgmental. If you think that he's distant, you'll engage or you won't engage because you'll assume he's distant. If you think God wants all of your perfection, you'll attempt to be perfect to engage with God. You see, how you see him defines how you engage with him. It might not be true, but it's true to you. This weekend, we went to a Mariners game. My whole family, me and my little crew. And my oldest, Willow, she was wearing these like little trendy semi-sunglasses. They're like reddish. So they weren't really sunglasses, but she was rocking them in the stadium, looking cute. Come on, girl. But she wore them well past the sun being down. You know what I'm talking about? Like... And at some point, she took them off. She's sitting right next to me. Goes, whoa. I said, what? She goes, it's not as bright as I thought it was. And the glasses were making everything like an amber color, like almost making it clearer, like brighter, like making it reddish. And she's like, whoa, it's dark. It was darker. She just didn't see it correctly. But she had worn them so long that how she saw it, she believed was true until she took the glasses off to see what was true. Truth hadn't changed, but it changed to her. Many of us are wearing glasses and we're seeing God as angry. He's not, but that's how you see him. You're seeing God as distant. He's not, but that's how you see him. And how you see him defines how you'll engage with him. And if you see him as distant, as angry, as judgmental, as abusive, if you see him an unhealthy and incorrect way, you'll engage with him wrong. When I was younger, and I'd bring my friends over to the house, they would misidentify how my parents were. My dad, off of the stage, real quiet, real chill. And I guess because he was like the senior pastor and he had more of an authority presence or figure. My friends were always like a little quieter around him. Like, I was pastor. And so he would just come through the house and, hey, what's up, bro? And then drift off. But my mom, my mom's a chatter. Chatter. Like, let's go. Like, let's get into this. She's the person that knows your life story when she sits next to you on the airplane. Right? She's like, let's get Wi-Fi and just look up your family heritage. Listen, where are you from again? Let's look this up. Like, she just gets into it. She is like all in your business. And people love it. She's like, yeah, she's so talkative. She's so friendly. She's so warm. So my friends would misunderstand my parents. Here's the problem. My mom was not chatting. She was interrogating. Come on, some of you moms out there looking all harmless and innocent, but you put a little lie detector on them and you're just like interrogating them. My friends are like, man, your mom was so chatty. I was talking. I was like, what did you say? What did you tell her? See, they thought that my mom was the nice, friendly one and my dad was a little more distant. They misunderstood. My dad, he was always like, yeah, your friends are great, Kay. And my mom would be like, you know that one friend? That one friend? I'm like, I thought you liked him. Like, no, just because I was talking doesn't mean I like him. My friends are like, your mom loves me. I'm like, she doesn't, actually. She doesn't like you, actually. When you left, she singled you out. She was like, that one can't come over again. You messed up. Because mom, in her chattiness, pulled you in to the trap. But my dad, because you misread that he you felt like he was authoritative and distant. No, he's way more relaxed and chill. But how they perceived my parents defined how they engaged with my parents. How you perceive God defines how you'll engage with God. If you think that he's the all-powerful, all just distant, then you'll shy away from him. How do you see God? Because how you see God is directly tied to if you live with an orphan spirit. If you're looking for acceptance and approval and love, and if you're looking for something or someone to say you're good enough because you're not hearing that from your Father in heaven. How do you see God? I got a slide of verses I want to read through. Because many of these verses speak directly to lies that we believe about our Father. Genesis 3, we're talking start of the Bible. When the cool evening breeze were blowing, the man and his wife heard the Lord God walking in the garden. They heard him walking in the garden. I read this verse often because I want this to be a core verse that you realize. Even after Adam and Eve eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, the tree that God said, don't eat of that tree. Even after they mess up, God still shows up for what? A walk. See, many of us Christians, even today, still believe that when I mess up, I better hide. If I mess up, I better not go to church. I was partying, I better make up, I better do something to make up, I better read my Bible, I better listen to worship music because I messed up, so now I gotta do something to get better again. No, even after Adam and Eve have the worst failure of their life, God shows up not to judge, not to condemn, not to criticize, but to just walk with them. Hey, where are you guys at? Is that the God that you see? Or do you still have glasses on that are creating a view that you think, oh, if I mess up, I better hide. If I mess up, God's going to get mad. If I mess up, God's going to be angry. Because my Bible says that he showed up for a walk. Think about it for me. The last time you messed up, how did you feel towards God? The last time you stumbled, the last time you did something, you go, God, why'd I do that? I don't want to do that. That's not who I want to be. I want to be kind, but I got angry. I don't want to be addicted to porn, but I looked at it again. I don't want to do this, but I did it again. Do you think that God in his love for you wants to show up for a walk? Or do you think if God showed up, he's there to judge? Do you think if God shows up, he's there to criticize? Do you feel condemned going into the presence of God? Or do you think, no, God just wants to be with me? Because my Bible says that he showed up for a walk. But how do you see God? Because how you see him defines how you engage with him. You see, Adam and Eve had a broken view of God from the beginning because the second they heard God, they hid. What about God's nature said you should hide? See, how you see him defines how you'll engage with him. What is more pleasing to the Lord, your burnt offerings and sacrifices or your obedience? Man, I can't believe that this was written in Samuel and it still is relevant for us today. What matters more to God, sacrifice or obedience? God, I'll make it up to you. I'll do this. I'll sacrifice. I'll lash myself and I'll do a thing and I'll fast. And God is like, would you just stop, move on and start obeying? Let it go. No, but I'll make it up to you. He's like, you couldn't. Don't worry about it. I just want your obedience, not your sacrifice. We still want penance. We still want to be worthy and we want to earn it and deserve it. And I just need to, God. And he's like, well, you can't. So that's not what I want. I want your obedience, not your sacrifice. How do you see God? The Lord is compassionate and merciful, slow to get angry, and filled with unfailing love. Unfailing means his love cannot fail. He is love. He doesn't express love. He is love. There's a huge difference. He's compassionate and merciful. Do you picture God as merciful? I know that you know the verses, but do you actually feel he's merciful to you personally? How do you personally see God? Because how you see him defines how you'll engage with him. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. For God so loved first. This is the one that drives me the most insane because I get so frustrated that people have this idea that I can come to God as a sinner, but once I've come to him, ooh, I better buck up. And the church just pushes that narrative. Like, we love sinners, but once you're in church, you better be right. Wait, so I could get to God as a broken mess, but once I'm here, I better be perfect? No, God came to us first. Why? Because he loves us. Because he loved you in your mess, and he loved you in the junk, and he loved you in your brokenness, and he loved you first. How do you see God? These last two verses are speaking to Jesus about Jesus on the cross. You will be scattered, each one going his own way, leaving me alone. Catch this, what Jesus says. Yet I am not alone because the Father is with me. And in 2 Corinthians, God was in Christ reconciling the world to himself. I can already hear it, so I just want to answer it. You hear that the statement that Jesus makes on the cross, why have you forsaken me? Why have you abandoned me? He's quoting a prophetic verse from Psalms 22. Read the whole chapter and you'll put it into context. He wasn't saying God left him. He was quoting a prophecy that he was thus fulfilling. But there's verse after verse after verse after verse that said God never left Jesus. He was in Jesus reconciling us to him. All of the disciples left. Everyone else abandoned Jesus, but God never left Jesus. What am I trying to say? God never left Jesus. But if you believe the lie that God abandoned Jesus, then you'll believe the lie that he'll abandon you. If you believe the lie that God had to turn away from sin, then when you sin, the devil says, see, God turned away from you. But he didn't do it to Jesus and he's not doing it to you. Just bothers me that in our theology, we've gotten so shallow or so, can I just say stupid, that we can believe a theology that says part of God became sin, but the other part of God couldn't even look at it. Once you understand the Trinitarian view of God, the Father, Son, and Spirit are one, Jesus cannot become sin and the Father not even look at sin. That would break apart the Trinity, which has never been broken in eternity. But we believe these stupid lies. And you go, yeah, but is it a really big deal, my theology on the cross? Yes, because the theology of the cross leads to the theology that you live with on a day-to-day basis, which the devil then uses against you and says, he abandoned Jesus and he'll leave you. The next time you sin, God looks away. The next time you fall short, God looks away. The next time there's a real crisis in your life, God might abandon you because you know what he did to Jesus. If he did it to Jesus, why wouldn't he do it to you? See, and then we see God wrong and then we approach him wrong. But he never left Jesus. He was there with him in his toughest, hardest, worst moment of his life. And I'm here to tell you today, in your toughest, worst, hardest moment of your life, God's not gonna leave you. He's not gonna bail on you, no matter if it was your faults or not. If you failed, God's not gonna abandon you. If you stumbled, God's not gonna leave you. God is for you. In Genesis, this is where the devil shows up, and he's been playing this play forever. We gotta wise up to these attacks. The devil shows up to Eve. He says, hey, Eve, let's try this fruit over here. This is good-looking fruit. This one tree, have you tried this one yet? This is delicious. Which I'm really excited to get to that time in life again where the animals talk to us. Could you imagine what they're going to say? Like, oh, finally, back to this. Been holding it in for thousands of years. Anyway, Eve's talking to the snake. And not freaked out by it. That's probably the one thing you're gonna remember by today, isn't it? Everyone's gonna go home and say, the pastor said animals are gonna talk one day. I worked my butt off for this message. You're gonna remember the animal Dr. Doolittle moment. Okay. The snake comes up to Eve and says, listen, let's try this fruit. She goes, oh, we can't even touch it. He goes, are you sure you can't even touch it? And then this is what the devil says. Eve, once you eat it, you're going to be like God. What is he doing? He's planting seeds of doubt in her view of God. Why? Because she was made already like God. She was made in his likeness and his image. She already was like him. But the devil was trying to warp her perspective of God, to warp her engagement with God. See, if you could see God in an unhealthy, broken way, then you will engage with him in a broken way. It was that doubt that he planted in her heart of you're gonna be like him, which led to her hiding from him. Why? The way she engaged with him was broken because of the way she saw him. Are you sure? Because I think once you try this fruit, you're gonna realize that you're now able to see the way God sees and be like God. She was already like God, but she started to doubt. And so then she said, maybe he's holding back. Maybe I'm not like him. Maybe he hasn't given me everything. Maybe there's some separation. And so then she tries the fruit, realizes her fall, her failure, her mistake, and then goes and hides. And it's the same play today. The devil is trying to plant seeds in your heart that say, maybe God's distant. Maybe he's judgmental. Maybe he's angry. Maybe he'll heal them, but he won't heal me. Maybe he loves them more than he loves me. Maybe he'll bless them, but he won't bless me. And he's trying to warp your perspective of God to limit your engagement with God. How do you see God? How you see him defines how you engage with him. And the struggle is, even if it's not true, if it's true to you, it's true. It's like the glasses that my daughter was wearing when she wore them so long that she thought what she saw was correct. And you've worn that hurt so long, you think it's true. And you've worn that failure so long, you think it's true. And you've worn those glasses that say God is distant and God doesn't talk to me and God doesn't engage with me and God isn't close with me and God doesn't love me. You've worn it so long, you believe it. But once you take them off and realize that your Father loves you, that he's for you, that he will never leave you, all of a sudden you realize, you see really what's true. And you can remove that orphan's heart, that orphan spirit from your life, that Jesus says, I won't leave you orphans. God, I got parents. No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a connection with your Father so that you can finally connect in a way that you were created to connect. Here, go with me to Luke 15. Let me read this whole story real quick for us. Here, Ben, why don't you come onto the stage with me? It's known as the prodigal son story, although I hate that title because it's more about a father than one of the two sons. But let me read this story for us. Luke 15, 11 through 32, it says, there was a man with two sons. The younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of property that has come to me. And he divided the property between them. He divided the property between them. They both got it. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and took a journey into a far country, and there he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into the field to feed pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate. And no one gave him anything. Could you imagine being so hungry that you would eat pig food? A young Jewish boy wasn't even supposed to be around pigs, let alone feeding them. He had completely lost his whole way, all of himself. Hungry even for the food of the pigs, the husk of the corn they would eat. I would just eat the wrapping of the corn husk, he says. But when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. When was he ever worthy? Levi's worthiness has never defined him as my son. My little man, my seven-year-old. I'd never have evaluated, are you worthy to be my son? But you can see that he's still seeing through broken lenses. I'm no longer worthy to be your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. And he arose and came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father interrupts him and says to his servants, quickly, bring the best robe and put it on him and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet and bring the fatted calf and kill it and let us eat and celebrate. For my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to celebrate. Now his older son was in the field. And as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked them what these things meant. And he said to him, your brother has come and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has received him back safe and sound. But he was angry and refused to go in, and his father came and begged him. His father comes out and begs him. But he answered his father, look, these many years I've served you. I've never disobeyed your command, yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours who came, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed a fatted calf for him? And he said to him, son, you're always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found. There wasn't one brother that was lost in this story. There's two. There's two brothers, and neither of them have a healthy view of their father. Both brothers are living with an orphan spirit. Both brothers have this issue with how they see their father, and because they see him incorrectly, they live incorrectly. They engage incorrectly. One of them saw their father in a broken lens, and he said, I want my stuff and I want to get out of here. I want to go party. I want to live it up. I want to live my life. I want to sleep around and spend my money and gamble it away and drink it away. And the other brother attempted to live perfect. I've never done anything wrong. I've obeyed every command. I've been here working tirelessly from sunup to sundown. I've done it all. I'm perfect. And both brothers are living broken because both of them don't see their father correctly. In this culture, when Jesus is telling this story, I'm sure you're aware of it, but to tell your parent that I want my inheritance means I wish you were dead. Said, I would rather you be dead so I could get my money and get out of here. This son goes up to his father and says, listen, the best thing you could do for me is die. Can I just get what you owe me as if he's owed? Can I get my inheritance? I just wish you were dead. And the father in his love for his son appeases him. Could you imagine the heartbreak of a dad? Could you imagine the burden on his family to instantly sell a third of his belongings? Okay, I'll sell my land, I'll sell some cows, I'll sell this, I'll sell that, and I'll just give you the money. And the son leaves, goes and pursues what he defined as hope and success and a good life, absent from his father. But the other son is living just as broken because he's trying to be perfect. And I never did anything wrong, and I've listened to you, and I've done every command, and I'm working my fingers to the bone. But the thing he totally misses, he goes, listen, you've never even given me a goat. But at the beginning of that story, it says the father divided it amongst the two of them. The whole time, all of it was the brother's. The whole time, the older brother, you've never given me nothing. He's like, nothing. I gave you everything. This is all yours. Why have you been working for something I already gave? Why are you trying to be perfect to get what I already offered? How many of us today can relate to that? I'm trying to be perfect to be righteous, and God's like, I already made you righteous. I'm trying to be perfect to be holy, and God's like, I already made you holy. I'm trying to be perfect so I can be forgiven. God's like, I've already forgiven. I'm trying to earn my presence, and God's like, I already gave it. While you were still lost and a sinner, I showed up and loved you. You didn't have to earn it then, and you still don't have to earn it now. Why are we trying to be perfect when God already gave it? It's amazing to me that the father went to both boys. In that culture, when they'd have heard this story, the men that were hearing it would have gasped. Because for a father to degrade himself to go out to his boys after they both humiliated him would have been appalling. But it says that he goes out to the oldest and begs him. That's not the way a man of esteem and has his own estate, has his own land, has his own servants and workers. And no. That type of man would have never begged. He would have never gone out to either of his sons. Not the prodigal, not the perfect one. Neither of them. And yet he goes to both. Why? Because this is a picture of our Father. And while you were attempting to be perfect and stuck your nose in the air, he came to you and said, I love you. I was never asking for you to be perfect. I already gave you everything. What are you still working for? It's yours. You can manage it because you've received it, but you don't have to work for it. You've already received it. Your father came out to you. Also, when I'm studying this, I think it's so hilarious that this older brother said, your son wasted your possessions away with prostitutes and sinful living. How did he know? Because religion always watches people's mistakes but never has compassion to love when they fall. Somehow the older brother was keeping tabs on his brother. He knew what he was doing, but he would never go help. He knew what he was going through, but he didn't serve. He's been out there with prostitutes. Why didn't you show up when he was in the pig pen? Because he doesn't deserve it. I'm the perfect one. See, religion always keeps account, always sticks his nose in the air, but never helps, never serves, never loves. You know what's sad is that not only can I relate to both of these boys, but I've honestly been in seasons where I can relate to both of them at the same time. There's been moments in my life where I am so messed up and yet somehow still judging people. You ever been there? There's just a few of us that have done that. Not that many of us are that crazy, hopefully. Have you ever, I'm out here totally messed up and yet somehow still judging you if you're not messed up where I'm messed up. Like, I would never do that. Are you for real, bro? Look at all the stuff you're doing right now. Yeah, but I'm not doing that. How can I be both the broken brother and the perfect brother? Because that's what happens to us, isn't it? The Father comes to both. But the thing that stands out the most to me in this story, you see, in Deuteronomy, it says that a son that dishonors his father in this level of a way is to be taken to the city gate and the men of the city stone him. It wasn't just a recommendation, it was a requirement. And so that father was looking every day for his son. He'd look. And there was a day he saw him and he takes off. And he's running for his son. And I could just hear him saying, I got to get there first. I got to get there. I got to get there first. Because no one's going to identify my son. No one gets to say that he's disrespectful. No one gets to say that he's disowned. No one gets to stone him in the city gates. I got to get there first because I got to get my arms around him because I need to make sure that he's safe and he's loved. Because everyone else would have had a right to stone him, but that father got to establish what happened to that boy, and he's running. He's like, I got to get there first. I got to get there first. I got to get there first. I got to save him. That father was running to his boy, not because he was mad, but because he loved him so much. You have a father in heaven that has been running after you, and there's a few of us in this room that think, oh, he's running. He's mad. Oh, he's mad. Oh, when he gets here, he's going to. But it's because we still are operating under the lens of a broken image of God. He's not running after you because he's mad. He's running after you because he's desperately for you. He just wants you so bad. And he wants to get there before you believe the lies of the neighbors that say, you're no good. You're broken. We should stone you. We should throw you away. You're a failure. And everyone else wants to define who you are, but God wants to get there first and say, no, you are a loved son of mine. Put a robe on him. Put a ring on his hand. Put sandals on his feet. See, all three of those things carried meaning in that culture. He said, put a robe. Why? Because I want to put my glory back around this boy. He may look like a pigspin. He may smell like a pigspin, but I want you. And when he said the best robe, what that meant was my robe. Get my robe. Get my robe. Not a good one. Get mine. That's what the best one would have meant. Say, put my robe on him. When God embraces you, you might have been coming out of a broken relationship. You might have been coming out of a broken past, and he's saying, put my glory on him. When people look at him, they may smell bad, but they're going to look like my glory. Put a ring on his hand. Why? Because the ring carried the signet of the family. Put authority back in his life. He could sign for me from now on. When he shows up, he walks in my authority. Put sandals on his feet. Why? Because in that culture, only freed people wore sandals. He says, someone tried to put you in bondage, but put sandals back on his feet, because when you're my son and daughter, you walk in freedom. You are no longer slave to your past. You're no longer slave to your addictions. You're no longer slave to your failures. You're no longer slave to whatever was holding you back. Put sandals on his feet. This is my son and daughter. They're walking in freedom with me. God is running after you. He will leave the 99 to pursue the one. So many of us are still living as orphans because we have a broken view of our Father. But once we see that our Father is running after us, whether we are broken and coming home or attempting to be perfect out in the field, God came to us both. He's coming for you. And it's not out of anger or judgment. It's he wants to love you and kiss you and beg you to come to the party. So whether you're trying to be perfect or coming from brokenness, would you lay down your past? Would you lay down your perfection? Would you lay down your works? Would you lay down your failures and allow your Father to fully embrace you? Take off those broken lenses and seek out the way he really is.
Thank you so much for joining with us today. I'm praying that you heard something that will impact your life. If you'd like more information, connect with us at the Christian Faith Church app or go to the website at christianfaith.us.